and welcome back to the 14th outing for our Camera Creations podcast. And we're here in the middle of January 2026, and we're going to bring you another show for an hour or so with a trailing wind. I'm joined today by Ian Bundy. Hello, Ian.
Hello.
Joe Hickey. Hello, Joe.
Hello there.
And Charlie Winston. Hello, Charlie.
Hello.
So, welcome to you all. Hopefully we can have a nice chat today. The theme of the show today, we decided in our wisdom, is going to be why we moved from phone to camera. And someone dubbed the show, I think it was Ian. Phone, camera, chat. No.
Camera, phone, chat.
So, a play on PSC, of course. So we'll go from there. You'll find all the stuff that we're going to talk about today in the Camera Creations Shared album in terms of photographs, as always. So you can tag along there while you're listening. And all the links to anything else will be at the website, which is still at tedsalmon.com/camera creations. And we've got the MeWe group going, and there's PodHub UK, and there's tedsalmon.com. So lots of places to get lost and not get lost and find your way back with a trailing wind that I spoke of before, particularly after a vindaloo. There's quite a lot to get through in terms of the main theme. So why don't we just get stuck straight into it? And I was very impressed with the structured way in which Charlie has presented his thoughts. So I reckon you should lead the way, Charlie.
Oh, okay.
Agreed.
Agreed, yeah. And the rest of us were very, very poor then, I must confess. So. Well, I thought it was a great topic, actually, to discuss. I was going to say phones versus cameras, but that's not really true, really. I shouldn't really look at it in ideological terms. It's not really phones versus cameras. You know, moving from a phone to a camera, it's more of a process, I think, for me. When I started shooting, obviously I used my phone like most of you guys, but the real limitations were you're shooting what the manufacturer wants you to see, really. It's giving you a standardized kind of look at reality. It's removing user intent. You know, there's no real creative function with a camera phone. Obviously you have like presets and filters built into your phone, and it's getting better, you know, day by day. But I did find it very limiting, particularly with the lack of autofocus and also ISO control, you know, in low light settings, night photography. Phones are really designed to present reality as something fixed, stable, something that's universally recognizable. You know, in my day-to-day work or what have you, I work in the property industry, I don't want to, you know, if I have to take a photo of a roof or an electric meter, I don't want to take a picture with my my digital camera and then like put it into Lightroom, color grade it, you know, and then send it on to like a supplier. That would be absurd, you know. Obviously, I just want to snap something quickly with my phone, and the phone is perfect for that. Hmm. But I think when it comes to artistic intent, creative endeavor, a phone is terrible because it doesn't really give you options. I had the Xiaomi 15 Ultra, I think, last year, and that was a really good phone, a really good camera phone. But it was very limiting because the ergonomics weren't there. It came with this very silly grip, Ted. I don't know if you saw it. It kind of plugged in. It was like a USB-C grip. And, you know, on paper it looked great. On my computer screen it looked great. But in my hand, it was just terrible. It was just a horrible user experience. And I immediately sent back the grip, and I promptly sold the phone. It was a great phone, but it was let down by the grip. I tend to agree with you. I had that phone as well last year, and the same thing for me, that I went and spent £100 to buy the grip. And again, the pictures of it on it were really good, but there was something missing on it, which, again, it just didn't gel with me as it was. It wasn't one thing or the other, I think. So.
Yeah, I agree. It was really good in the daytime, you know, just shoot at f8. But when it came to low light, show, yes, you can do a slow shutter speed with the Xiaomi 15 Ultra, but it's just not the same. And it kind of removes noise and gives you that kind of computational look. And in many ways, I actually want the noise in it. I have to add the noise back in Photoshop or Lightroom. So that was another thing that goes against phones versus cameras. I mean, going back to night photography, I think the model these days with a lot of phones is that they intervene heavily to maintain this kind of this look that the manufacturer, I keep on going back to this, but the look that the manufacturer wants you to have, you know, what the Samsung phone wants you to have, or Xiaomi wants you to have, or Apple want you to have. And as a photographer, you're trying to get away from that. You don't want to be like everyone else. You want to have your own kind of user experience. You know, it sounds cliche, but it's true. When you're taking a photo with a camera, you want manual controls, and you want to be able to, you know, frame your subject in the way you want to shoot. But I think a phone just gets in the way of that. And that moves me to my next point, which is over-sharpening with phones. They do this thing where they over-sharpen the image to reinforce kind of realism, but at the same time, it flattens, like, texture and grain and noise, and the image just looks overly processed. Edges are prioritized, but texture and subtle variation, they're sacrificed on the phone, removing artistic intent. With a camera, you know, you don't get that. You can manipulate the ISO to whatever you want, and you can even add grain. But I just feel like phones fall short. Hopefully in the future that will change. I know the Xiaomi 17 Ultra was recently released, and it even comes with a physical dial, I believe, around the...
It's a zoom dial, yeah.
Yes, yeah, very impressive. But I think in action, I don't know how good that would actually be. I mean, when you're actually rushing and you're in a street environment trying to take quick pictures. I think, actually, Ted, that the ring on the Xiaomi 17 Ultra, I think it's customizable, so you can choose it to change the aperture or the zoom.
I didn't see that in the review that I in the couple of reviews. All they showed was it zooming. They didn't show that it was customizable, but it might be. Okay.
I think that's bad then, if what you say is true, because with zooming, I usually shoot with primes. I do have a GM2 24-70 on my Sony system, but I don't always zoom in and out. I'm always usually changing the ISO. So obviously you shoot in aperture priority, shutter priority, but I shoot in ISO priority. I kind of fix my aperture and my shutter, depending on the conditions, and then just change the ISO to preference. So on a phone, I'd like to do the same thing, ideally, and that's probably what I would use the physical dial around the camera lens on the Xiaomi.
Oh, hang on, Charlie. I've just looked it up on the fly, and it is customizable. Yeah. You can change it for aperture, EV, focus, and zoom. I'm not sure how they claim aperture. Well, I think it's got a two-point aperture setting, hasn't it?
Okay, so is it variable aperture? I'm guessing the aperture would change depending on how you zoom, how zoomed in you are. I don't think it would be fixed.
No.
Or maybe it's digital compensation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but the ring, you're right, the ring is customizable.
Okay, that's very interesting, actually. I'm going to have to investigate that. So going back to phones again, the noise reduction, I'm sure you all probably agree with me, the noise reduction on phones is usually a good thing. But in this case, when you're actually, you know, trying to be a photographer, it's bad. You kind of want noise, and it really gets in the way of controlling the variables, the exposure triangle. You know, when you have a computer overriding what you want to do, I think over sharpening it isn't so much about style. It's more about noise reduction, you know, on these phones. They're trying to protect the idea of a clean and consistent look, whereas with a camera, you don't get that, which is why many people for the first time, when I started shooting, and I'll talk about this later, I think I had a Canon 350D, one of my earlier cameras, and when I just took a picture, it looked terrible because you had to know how to manipulate the camera to get the best out of it. But with a phone, you don't have that. Obviously, it's just point and shoot. So for a beginner, a phone's good. But when you want to get more advanced, it's not so good. I guess what I'm trying to say is a phone removes decision-making, whereas cameras, DSLR cameras, they reintroduce decision-making, which could be seen as a bad thing or a good thing, depending on where you are in the, in your photography journey. But it's all about decision-making, I think, and mm-hmm. it's that kind of philosophical divide, isn't it, between a phone and a camera. A phone collapses choice by removing friction, whereas a camera aims to preserve your intent, preserve your choice. But ironically, it makes everything harder. I mean, trying to learn, you know, even though the exposure triangle is very simple, you've only got three variables, it can get very difficult very quickly, because obviously alongside your aperture, your ISO, your shutter speed, let's not forget, you also have your autofocus. Autofocus is a whole different ballgame with a Sony camera. There's so many different, you've got zone, you've got fixed, you've got spot, I think you've got small spot, medium, large. They've even introduced XL on the latest firmware update. Then you've got many different things within the camera you can manipulate and do. There's just so many different variables to take note of when you're dealing with a DSLR versus an iPhone or a Xiaomi or an Android phone or whatever.
That's for sure. I spoke before on the show about nomenclature, and when I selected my camera that I was going to be getting, I would spend days on end just reading the book and reading it and looking at the parts and learning how to do this, that and the other. And that was on a relatively simple film SLR, not even a digital one. And you're right. You need to learn about all these things and what they do and how they do them, and you know what you when you need spot metering and when you need evaluative metering and what you can do with that stuff. And it's an investment in lots of time and interest and hobbyist kind of focus for people.
And that's before you've even started niching down. You've got flash photography, you've got studio photography, you've got something that I'm going to be getting into, infrared photography. Mm-hmm. You know, when you start talking about full spectrum camera conversions, you know, it's on a whole different wavelength. Quite literally, you have to learn the different light wavelengths, and you feel like a noob all over again. You know, so there's always something new to learn about.
Do you think that's a barrier, Charlie? So again, I'm very similar to you. I mean, I only just picked up recently the last 5 years photography from moving from a phone. But it seems that everybody has a phone. Everyone's a photographer now. Yeah. And it seems like the photography business and cameras is the business is going very well. So there must be people that have a similar journey that have, I can take good photos, I should get a bigger camera because I could take even better photos. And then you have this complete off a cliff thing of why don't they look the same? And I don't know if everybody is going to spend that time and effort or gets the bug that they want to do it or get frustrated that it's not what they're used to and they just spent £2,000 on a camera.
I think it kind of depends on where people are, you know, in their life and what they're doing and how much time they have. Because to buy a proper camera and to learn how to use it and how to manipulate it and get the results that you want. You know, you can't just buy a camera and go out and start taking fantastic pictures. It takes time and effort. I know it certainly took me a while from me buying my first camera. Probably took me maybe 4 or 5 days of, you know, really looking into it, how to get it to work. And then I could go out there and take photos. But we're talking like 30 hours of my time just to be able to operate the thing and learn composition, because that's the key thing. You've got to train your eye, haven't you, about what looks good. I would say it's less about the technicalities of how to operate a camera and more about composition, and to a lesser extent maybe something like color theory or lighting or
I think that's something that Joe mentioned last week when we met up, was again it's I think having that eye and seeing a photograph, and I think there was one podcast that I got into quite heavily when I first started. I think it was the Beginner Photography Pod. And it said, basically, you think like you're a photographer all the time. You're out walking and you're looking at things. And the wife says the same thing to me, that if we're walking the dog, I haven't got my camera with me, but she said, oh, you're looking at this and this to try and see a picture. And it amazes me that, again, the business is so well that people are getting over that huge hurdle of that learning curve that they need to get success, whereas we're used to instant gratification on a phone.
However, quite a lot of what has just been said in the last 2 or 3 minutes there, one could say applies also to someone with a phone. And you know, having the eye and walking around looking for a shot, you could easily say, well, you don't necessarily need a all singing, all dancing SLR camera to be have that mindset.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that was one of the reasons I picked up a camera, because my wife said, "Oh, you've got a bit of an eye; you should get a camera." And that's when the disappointment started.
I think at the moment there seems to be like a renaissance with people who aren't into cameras, and obviously everyone has a phone, but they want to get into it. But they don't go out and buy themselves a DSLR or even an SLR. They buy like a Digicam from the early 2000s. So I know a few people. And I almost find this like an insult. They think that anyone can take a picture. So they go out, they buy like a Digicam, which is obviously inflated in price now because everyone wants one. And I say to them, well, why did you buy a Digicam? And they said, oh, well, it has a flash. I'm like, right, okay. Well, I mean, you could buy any camera and just add a flash to it. And they go, oh, no, but I want the flash look. I'm like, well, these Digicams, they don't even shoot raw. I don't know what they shoot, but it's just like this. This kind of like crushed kind of look, and that's kind of what they want, which is fair enough. But I just think people are after the aesthetic of what an image is from a certain era. They don't necessarily want to learn. I could take a picture right now on my camera and then I can edit it in a Photoshop to get it to look like one of those Y2K era looking photos. But people don't seem to want to learn to do that. But I think the learning is half the fun, really. I don't know what you guys think about that.
I think part of it is as well, what you're talking about, is some people following a trend that cameras have become cool, like the Fuji X100 is worth more secondhand than it was new. It's crazy. And these aren't real people that want to get into photography. They're just following a trend, I think.
We're talking about Fuji. Have you heard of the, I think it's called the Fuji X frame or half frame? And it shoots in portrait mode as like the default image. So if you want to take a horizontal landscape photo, a normal photo, you have to turn it the other way around. It's all like backwards.
It's hugely popular in Japan, isn't it? It's just gone crazy. And they're not people who are into photography as such. It's just following the trend.
Yeah,
I think it only has 30 shots, doesn't it? It's been designed to act like a film instant camera, that you have even though it's digital, you only have sort of 30 shots, which is interesting. But I jumped on this bandwagon. I bought one of the, on eBay before I went away at the end of last year, and bought an Instax, the Polaroid camera, with 20 images, and to document a trip. And there was some real fun in that. Again, the pictures aren't great, but the fun of taking a picture, knowing that you've only got 20 that's going to last you a week, and planning when you're going to take those pictures was quite a really enjoyable experience. Again, the pictures aren't fantastic quality, but it's tangible. You get it out straight away, and it's a Polaroid picture, and you can build a picture of your holiday or something like that, all in those, something that you've got straight away when you've taken the picture. And I think it was like £35 on eBay. It's I think the film was more expensive than the camera.
There's a lot of value in that, which is something I touch on later on.
So you're saying, Ian, there's kind of like a value where you have a film camera and it's finite, isn't it? So you only have so many shots that you've got, so there's like scarcity. What about, like, and I know we'll talk about this later with the Ricoh, the black and white edition, but having like scarcity built into a digital camera where you can only take, say, 30 shots, do you think that might be a hit with the hipster crowd buying cameras? Do you think they'll all gravitate towards digital cameras where they have a built-in kind of like scarcity of how many shots you could take, just like film? If you really want film, get a digital camera with built-in scarcity.
Yeah.
That could be the next kind of thing. And then people might say, well, that's ridiculous. You know, who would do that? And then I would say, well, buying a digital camera that only shoots black and white is ridiculous.
But, yes.
But it's happening already.
Yeah. Know?
Did you see the story I posted in MeWe just a day or two ago was of a, what's it called? A retro, oh yeah, it's called the Await camera. And it makes you wait 24 hours to see your photos. So it's a digital camera, but it holds the photos you take so that you can't get the instant gratification. It feels like it's a film camera. I mean, how nuts is that?
And this is a digital camera.
It's a digital camera, but it doesn't let you. Presumably, the chip in it and the processor holds it back and doesn't let you see the photographs for 24 hours.
Well, there we go. That's just like what I was saying, isn't it?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Built-in scarcity. That is.
Absurd. We're not evolving as a species at all, are we? We're really going.
No, we're regressing. I think at this rate.
Exactly.
But interesting. I went on a trip, but when I did my Antarctica trip, there was a lot of professional photographers there, and there's a lady there called Rachel Talabard who does photography of waves, and some of the images she takes are absolutely amazing. But from the trip, she said she won't look at the pictures she's taken, and she puts the memory card into a bowl, and she revisits it in a couple of months later or something like that.
Oh, right.
Which was quite an interesting thing. That was a trip. It goes there. And when I've forgotten about the trip, then I'll go in and have a look at the pictures, which was an interesting thing.
Yeah, that sounds very retro. That's like turning round your LCD screen on the back and not even looking at it, just treating it like an old film camera. There's also Ed House posted in the group, I just noticed as well, another newish Kodak camera, which costs $100, and it's called the Pix Pro C1, and this thing hasn't even got a proper xenon flash on it. It's got an LCD flash emulating a the whole phone experience, but making it look like a camera for the trendy crowd. So lots of options out there and ideas being chucked around by the looks of it. One of the things that I wanted to chuck in the pot, though, going back to the central theme here, was aperture. We did touch on it just briefly just now, but this is the one reason why I don't take photography with phones very seriously. Now, there are a few exceptions. As you said, that's Xiaomi. I think it's got a two-point focus or a very small range of, aperture settings, or a very small range of being able to manipulate the aperture. But given a proper camera with a proper aperture ring and for example, a depth of field, stop down button, so you can see what you're doing, so you can make decisions about how much of your photograph is going to be in focus and how much is not. And then you've got to take into account the whacking great big bit of glass which you're using compared to anything in any phone anywhere, which completely relies, as you said earlier, Charlie, on software processing. And it's just a different world. If I could get some aperture control, proper aperture control on a camera, and that's on a phone, and that's Xiaomi, you'd think, let's make it fatter and let's go the whole hog and let's make it work. But no one seems to want to do it, and it's defying physics. But even if you did do it and you got to that point, you're still then up against the fact that you haven't got a big piece of glass that's enabling much, much better quality images.
Yeah, but I think it's also about, where you are and whether you have a camera on you at the time or not. So I would happily have, trade in my skinny S25 Ultra for something, say, twice the thickness that had more power as a camera, definitely. And then it would always be on me. But I don't always have my massive Sony A7 R5 with me. I rarely take it out in the UK. It's usually like a holiday camera. And I think most people here would probably they'd probably agree with me there. It's difficult to always have a large camera on you.
Yeah.
Now, saying that, you can have, Ted, something like the Ricoh, but that comes with its own set of trade-offs. Yes, it does have aperture control, but it's a very basic camera. It's more like a point and shoot. And you compare that to something like a phone, I'd say a phone might be equally weighted as a Ricoh, might even have more of an edge just because you can get those wider angle shots in. I think on my S25 Ultra, you could do like a 14 millimeter wide lens shot, whereas with a Ricoh, you can't do that. With my big chunky camera, I have to carry a second lens to try and get that wide angle shot, whereas if I've got my phone on me, and this goes into another point I was going to mention, I treat my phone as like a second lens. I don't see it as a distraction, really. I see my phone more as another, tool in the toolbox, so to speak. It's just another lens, lens to use while I'm out taking photos. If I don't have the right lens, then I use my phone, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and I think many people could probably relate to that kind of thing.
Yeah, certainly. I think it's a great tool to have in your bag still. I like to take phone shots even when I'm out with my camera. I'm a sucker for taking shots of people taking shots as well.
Oh, I like your photos. I think they're quite good when you take it when someone else is taking a photo.
But
one thing with phones that I really don't like is the autofocus, or the lack thereof. You haven't got wide or zone or spot, or maybe you have. My Samsung does have autofocus, but it's nothing like a DSLR. If I want to shoot zone, the zone focus isn't really the same thing. There's many different autofocus
settings. So Sony Xperia goes the closest, I think. They're trying to put the Sony camera experience into a phone, and they do pretty well. Again, I come back to aperture, where it stops short. But if you want stuff like spot metering and evaluative metering and zonal stuff and all that stuff you're talking about, the Sony Xperia is very satisfying for someone that would be spending the time getting to know how to do that with it.
I forgot to mention that metering. That's a very important point, actually, Ted. I can't do that on my phone. I can't control the metering.
No.
Do you not use Pro Mode at all? Have you used that?
I use Pro Mode, but it's so slow. I have to go into my camera. I've set up a shortcut for it, But it's just not the same. I can't quickly access my settings when I need to take a shot. For a street scene, you know, it's just too slow. Unless I'm doing like a landscape, then it's fine. But for like street photography, you know, forget it.
I haven't delved into the pro modes in phones that much because I think they're more about the point and shoot, aren't they, as a tool. But I've just noticed on this, my Honor V5, it's got metering on there in the pro mode.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think it has on the Oppo Find X9. I'd say that's what one thing I find, back to the creativity thing, is that having the Oppo, because it has so many different modes on it, it does drive some creativity. I've got some shots that I would never have got on my iPhone or anything like that, because it's got X-Pan and you can take this ultra wide shot, and it's got a master mode, and you've got the full auto, full manual mode for metering and bits and pieces. I mean, there is a lot you can do on it, but as I say, I still think it's back to your original point, Charlie. I think one thing that the phone is, I don't know if it's more disposable, but you don't have that intent. You're not going to, I'm going to plan to take this shot and I'm going to go there at this time and do this and this. It's more around, I have a phone on me, I can take that picture. There's no planning or intent behind it.
I think it's quite surprising when I look back, like when I was traveling in the past, I actually went out just with my phone taking photos, and now looking back on it, I'm thinking, how absurd, what was I thinking? But I didn't, you know, I was like blissfully ignorant, you know, I had no idea what I could achieve with a camera. And even if I had a camera back then, I wouldn't be able to use it, because, you know, you need to train yourself how to use the UI and everything, especially with a Sony. But I think that's how we all started, isn't it? We all started with phones taking pictures, and that was our primary camera.
No.
I wouldn't recommend.
Apart from Ted.
Yeah.
One of the things before I finish talking about Sony Xperia was that with phones, you don't get a green focus confirmation light that you get in virtually all proper cameras. With the Sony Xperia, it's the only phone that I have come across where you do get that, and with most of the models you get a two-stage shutter button physical. The Sony Xperia, if you are a photographer and you want to get as close as you can to photographer's experience, the Sony Xperia is clearly the way to go. It takes an awful lot of learning, but that green focus confirmation light is a really simple example, and I just don't understand why no one else does it.
You've got focus peaking on there as well, haven't you, Ted?
Exactly. There's all sorts of stuff that it can do, except the having big glass and having aperture control.
You can tell the Alpha team has definitely had a lot of input in the Xperia, which is brilliant. I think more phone makers need to talk to some specialists and add these features in.
You can't defy physics, though. That's
the problem.
At the end of the line, there's only so much Sony can do with an Xperia phone, much as they would love to do more. Charlie, you're saying
that's ultimately the reason from phones to cameras, isn't it? The physics side of things.
Talking about the physics side of things, you can get those magnetic stick-on camera lenses for phones. I've seen them. I think it was Huawei were experimenting with them, and Xiaomi as well.
Moment do excellent ones as well.
Yeah, but I don't know what the trade-off with that is. Obviously, it's bigger and bulkier, and you have to walk around carrying a lens in your pocket. It begs the question, why don't you just get a real camera? You know, why would you, you know, have like a half-hearted camera phone? It just seems redundant, really. Better off just having a real camera.
I think that's a compromise, isn't it? Because going back to the Sony Xperia, I had the Pro 1, which was this stupidly expensive thing that was really targeted at, I think it had, there was something quite, yeah, it had a 1-inch sensor, which wasn't totally a 1-inch sensor at the time. But ultimately, you were spending £1,500 on a phone that wasn't doing anything particularly well. And I don't know if we've gone from this convergent where everything on your phone is, you're putting everything on it, and now we're going the other way. I mean, I have an iPod, I have a Game Boy now, I have a camera. There's less and less, I mean,
compartmentalizing all your tech.
Exactly. It's sort of gone the other way now, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
You'll have a torch and a calculator before you know it. Yeah. I think with cameras, you know, it's reality isn't average. You know, with a phone, it's averaging reality with computational trickery, if you will. You know, HDR, you know, taking the luminosity from the shadows and the highlights, and I think basically combining them into some kind of average using the metering mode that's selected. You know, with a real camera, you know, you get to choose the intent of what you're taking a photo of. There's less probability. You know, you decide the meaning of, I mean, it sounds a bit artsy saying this, but you decide the meaning of what you're taking a photo of. I just think there's so much work to do in Photoshop when you, for me at least, when I take a photo with my phone, it's almost better just doing it with a real camera. I think that's my experience of it. And I moved away, you know, from a phone to a camera because I wanted to really have more of an input, more of a process using the camera, which I couldn't get on the phone. But I was let down so many times because I like night photography and the phone just was terrible for that. They're getting better, but the quality is still lacking, I find.
Yeah,
sure, you can all agree.
Yeah,
I do. Just to mention that Joe's dropped off the call because he says that they've got an outage of connectivity where he is, so he'll be back when he can get connected again. But yes, I think we would all agree with that, Charlie. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not anti-phone. I still use a phone for taking photos, but I just don't do it exclusively. It's part of my toolkit, if you will. It's just not a primary tool. You know, I would never go out with the intent of taking photos with my phone. I always have my camera with me. If it's not going to be my Ricoh GR, if I'm on holiday, then it will be one of my bigger cameras. You know, I think phones are excellent for speed, they're excellent for certainty. Phones are unbeatable for reliability, but I do think a camera wins most of the time.
Yep.
Do you think that restricts? So I guess a lot of people have a proper camera and they'll take away on holiday, but does that restrict the amount that you actually use your camera? Is it that you only get to really use it within 10 times a year or something like that, as opposed to you know your phone inside out and you're taking probably 100 times more on your phone than you do with the camera? Well,
yeah, I think, Ian, it's more a question of quality versus quantity, isn't it? Like, I could use my phone all the time to take photos on my everyday life, and I don't think they're going to be very interesting photos, being honest. I think with a camera, I definitely have more intent. And also, I have the viewfinder, the EV. When I look through it, everything's black around the edges, and then I have like this laser focus of what I'm going to take a photo of. You don't get that, obviously, with a phone.
No.
Obviously, I use the screen on my camera. I use it a lot. But I also try to use the EV. I just find the eyepiece is, I sound silly saying this, but I feel almost invisible when I look through it, because I'm also taking photos of a lot of people close up. I feel like they're not looking at me when I'm looking through the viewfinder. I just find that helps me psychologically, really, for some reason.
Do you feel more in the moment?
Yeah, I do.
Immersed in it rather than looking at a screen.
It's more intentional, isn't it? If you're actually looking through it and, you know, you got like a target on the subject, and you snap them, and they're not, they look at you, and they're not sure if you're taking a photo of you, and they look at you again and take more photos of them. They don't really react. Whereas if you haven't got the camera against your eye, I find that they can see your eyes looking at their eyes, and they know that you're taking a photo. That always makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable. But then again, you're getting that eye contact, which is good sometimes, you know, if that's the look you want to go for. But also ergonomics, you know, you can't be the camera. You know, you've got it in your hand, or you have a – I mean, answer me this. Would you guys walk around with a camera strap around your neck, but instead of having a camera there, you have your phone? Of course not. Of course you wouldn't. You'd feel ridiculous. No one would do that. And I think that's my point. Cameras aren't really camera phones aren't meant to be used in that way. You know, you're not meant to. You can buy on AliExpress these MagSafe camera grips for your phones, and they just look so silly. They attach, so you can hold it one handed and that. But honestly, who would do that? I mean,
Back to the Xiaomi and that I had last year, that I did go to all the effort of buying the camera grip.
Yeah,
and it wasn't the same. It didn't. I used it more without the camera grip, because it was another thing in the way, I think. I think that's. But I still strive for having more access to a camera. I think that's the thing that I struggle with. That from moving from Sony to Nikon, they're bigger cameras and they're more intrusive. Mm-hmm. And I even going down to a Nikon Z6, it is a lot smaller than the 8, but it's still a lot bigger. But that's why I guess a bit like phones, you're looking for this sort of Goldilocks camera that is going to give you everything full frame, the Ted Salmon problem, we call it, maybe. I don't know.
Something that doesn't exist.
Joe's back, incidentally. Hello, Joe.
Hello, I'm back here. Power cut got me.
Oh, it was a power cut, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. So you haven't missed a thing. Honest.
Okay. I'll re-listen anyway.
So back to your list of points, Charlie. Where did you get to?
We were talking about ergonomics. So I was saying, Joe, how, you know, you can't really beat a DSLR because the ergonomics are perfect, you know, and compared to a phone. I was saying to everyone, you know, you'd walk around with a camera around your neck, but you wouldn't put a camera strap around your neck with a phone around your neck. I mean, you'd look silly, wouldn't you? So that's
unless you're
point.
In Japan.
Oh, well, in Japan, I mean, they would look silly. They would have funny gadgets and stuff. I mean,
or a TikTok content creator, but that's something different.
Yeah. Basically, I mean, my preference is my preference for cameras is purely practical. It's not ideological. I'm not against phones. You know, with a camera, you have ergonomics. You've got buttons, real chunky buttons. Grip. Ted's getting excited now. balance as well. You know, when you have a phone in your hand, it kind of is lopsided. With a real camera, you know, you have balance. You can hold it with two hands. Low light performance without heavy computational intervention, although you could argue against that. I mean, the Sony camera is basically a computer now, but it performs and behaves differently versus a phone. And then finally, autofocus. You know, autofocus does what I ask it to do on a camera. Autofocus does not, it doesn't do what I want it to do on a phone. You know, it does something else, what the manufacturer wants it to do. You know, autofocus is hugely important for me. You know, if I'm doing buildings, if I'm doing architecture, I want to shoot wide. If I'm shooting people in the street, I want spot or zone. I don't use the other autofocus modes. I think Sony has too many. I think there's like 10 or 12, but at least it's nice to have that option.
When I started out, of course, we had manual lenses. And in terms of trying to go retro, It's not a bad idea, you know, when you've got a split screen and you're turning your focus ring and you're learning how to focus properly. I know that it cuts down on opportunity and timing and all the rest of it, but actually going back to basics, there's a lot to be said for going back to manual focusing, I think, and having a proper split a split screen circle to do it with, and not just other means of focus confirmation, as much as I just praised it in the Xperia.
I must say there is a satisfaction from it. Like, I've had a macro lens where you have to manually focus, and when you get the shot manually focusing, it's such a beautiful thing.
Yeah,
but how many shots do you miss until you get the perfect?
that's part of the fun.
I totally buy that.
I think it depends. I mean, for macro, obviously you need manual. I've only got one manual lens. I have the 9mm 7 Artisan lens, which is great. But I mean, I don't think I'd use manual for like street kind of work. I think manual's great, but it has a time and a place.
Not got speed, has it, on its hands, has it?
But as you say,
Charlie, at least it doesn't do its own thing like with a phone.
But Ted, answer me this. Would you recommend to someone new getting into photography, get, you know, this camera or that camera, but get it with a manual lens? Would you honestly tell them to get a camera with a manual lens for someone just starting out and knows nothing about photography? Probably not.
Because you've got to remember, Charlie, where I started, and it was a different place to you. And I think that if Chris Kelly was here, he would agree with me that learning your basics first of focus and how that works and how you just get it into your head early on. Later on, I mean, I went through the whole time when autofocus first came in, and Canon started producing autofocus, and it was clunky and slow and crap and awful. Frankly, it just wasn't worth bothering with. And for a long time, even though we had autofocus, I didn't use it. I just stuck with where I was. But in answer to your question, yes, absolutely. But we're coming from different places.
But also, I mean, we've got new generations coming up now, you know, people on TikTok or what have you. So asking them to, you know, go all out and try manual for the first time with a proper camera is kind of like an extremist thing to do. I don't think they're going to enjoy it, and they'll probably give up, you know, before they get into it. You want them to get into it first, and then once they enjoy the process, then they can go, okay, I really like this with autofocus. Let's try manual. That's what I did. Maybe I would have given up, you know, if there's like a quantum leap with a Charlie in another universe and he tried out a camera and it was in manual, I could have given up after a week because I hated it.
I don't think you would have, Charlie. I reckon you're the type of person who would have not given up, and that's why you're right for photography, and the people who give up, they're not right for it.
Maybe.
It's hard to say.
Yeah. I think choosing a camera isn't a rejection of phones, for me at least. It's choosing a different tool for a different intention. Basically, moving to a camera is about intent and comfort, not superiority. There's nothing wrong with using a phone. It's a choice, not a judgment.
What about something controversial to say now? So with you on all of that, but what about the challenges around user experience software on cameras, which is hot garbage compared to what's on phones? It amazes me that some of the technology or the user interface of being able to get images off, how easy it is to get it off your phone compared to off your camera, and how clunky the software experience is from my experience on Sony as well as Nikon, is nothing like the kind of experience you would experience on a phone.
It's really funny you say that, because I mentioned how the Alpha team getting involved with Sony and the specialists on the camera on the phone side. We need specialists from the phone side to help cameras out, don't we?
I think so.
I definitely get your point, because it's not as intuitive as the software on phones at all. I mean, we have touch screens on our cameras now, and you can't always change things with the touch screen. It's like, why can't I? I have to use this dial. Yeah, it's funny. Do you think they do it on purpose?
I think they do. I completely agree with Ian on this one, actually. I wish I had my Samsung UI implanted into my Sony Alpha cameras, because the Sony Alpha UI is just garbage. And I think...
And everyone knows it.
Yeah, everyone knows it. And it doesn't have to be a Samsung UI. It could be, not iOS, but it could be some kind of other variant of Android on the phone, on the camera. I think that would be really good, actually. I'd really enjoy that. But I think they're really far behind in terms of user experience. You know, using the software on the camera is just really poor. And as you were saying, Ian, transferring photos over, it's always such a pain. Whereas on my phone, it's really straightforward.
But yeah, we still prefer cameras.
Yeah. The user experience, I mean, I don't know if you've used the Fuji X100. The interface and the different size fonts and everything that it's got on the actual user, it flies in the face of anything. It's sort of, they're doing it to look jarring as well, which again, that was one thing that sort of turned me off the Fuji, was the menus and everything like that. It just seemed that they made some of the text larger there, moved this in, it didn't fit on the same screen, and it was like, oh my god.
So you're saying inconsistent fonts?
Yeah, on the X100.
That sounds like a nightmare.
If you look at it, compare, I know it's comparing, but even comparing, was comparing it to the Leica, but also to the Sony, it's horrible. I mean,
Sony's pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, but I would recommend having a play with it, or just look at a YouTube video of the interface. It's really bizarre, because again, we're used to this sort of seamless UI now, and we're so lucky. But again, with majority of cameras, it seems that they're trying to limit people coming into the club by making it a little bit too complex for people, maybe. I don't know.
I must say Panasonic's is probably one of the better ones. The UI is not too bad to learn. I don't know if you guys have had hands-on with any Panasonic cameras at all.
I'd had a Panasonic years and years ago, but a digital, you know, maybe about 10 or 12 years ago. And I found that it was very usable, no problem at all. But I think I know what you're saying, Ian, about the Fuji. I'm the first one to praise the F100, or the X100F, which I had. And the hybrid viewfinder is just wonderful. But you're right. In a sense, which is what I was saying earlier, going back to basics, turn the screen around. Well, in that case, you couldn't. But just take photographs with a viewfinder and treat it like an old fashioned camera, and don't be fiddling about. And then we come back to Charlie's point about buttons and dials, and how much better cameras were when you could just control everything with buttons and. Don't start me. So, Charlie, summarise. You've got a nice list of cameras here that you have gone through the years with, which would be nice to quickly go through. But just to summarise, just to summarise the why we move from phone to camera in a few words, perhaps each of us, starting with Ian.
the cameras I've gone through.
No, why we move from phone to camera, the theme of the show and the discussion. Yeah. So a very brief one sentence or two summary of your final thoughts on that.
Final thought, I thought I could take really good photos, and it was the decision to then, I like what I can take on my phone, I'll get a camera. And that was the main thing. And it sort of went on from there. And so been doing it for the last 5 years. It was sort of 5 years ago I picked up the Sony A7 III.
Okay. Joe, why you move from phone to camera?
Quite simple. It's scope for creation. What you can do with the raw files, the quality you can get in low light. Yeah, the scope for creation.
Okay. And Charlie, final word.
Ergonomics, autofocus, and really greater control. I think that's why I prefer a camera over a phone.
Super. Okay, right. Let's hit this list of, we're nearly up to an hour, so a brief kind of run through of your camera journey, which you put in the recording notes here for us. It just looks really interesting.
I'll make it quick.
Yeah, go for it.
So this is just like over 25 years, you know, from myself from the age of 16, my first camera, going all the way up to today. My first camera was the Nikon F60, and it was a film camera. You know, Ted should be happy. It was a film camera. Fantastic, but then again, I didn't know any better. It just felt authentic to me at the time. I only shot, interestingly, with black and white because I felt it was more vintage. Then moving on, I had, my next camera was a Canon Digital Isis 2, and it was a novelty at the time for the digital era, you know, and I also liked the video. It took video, again, that was a novelty, and it just felt really futuristic. It was the excitement that mattered more than the image quality. Out of all the cameras there, those are my two favorites before we got into more serious cameras in 2023, 2024. Between then, I also had a Canon EOS 350D with a kit lens, and that's when I basically ditched cameras for like 10 years. The experience was so bad, I finally realized that, you know, a real camera can actually actively discourage the user. It was slow, ugly files. It was worse than my phone at the time. My phone at the time was a OnePlus 3, and it just offered a better experience than the Canon back in 2015. But then things soon changed going into 2023. As you all know, I had the went to the Sony system, and I just loved it. I had a Sony A7 Mark II, a Ricoh GR3X HDF, and I recently purchased an A7 R5 and an A7 R. I bought the A7 R the other day because I'm going to convert it to infrared for full spectrum photography.
Which we're going to be covering as a theme on the next show.
Yes, unfortunately, I won't be available. But I'll be in Hong Kong. But it'll be interesting to listen to, nonetheless.
Okay.
So that's kind of a wrap up of my photography journey. I did have some other cameras there, but they were nothing to really mention. I mean, they were all terrible. But the Nikon F60, I really enjoyed that camera, and also the Canon ISIS too.
But by the time the F series got to 60 or even 50, they'd already started ditching quite a lot of buttons and dials, and quite a lot of automation going on.
It was quite minimalist, I must say, for a film camera.
Yeah. I had the F50. I didn't have the 60. I've got an F80 at the moment. The Ixus 2 is an interesting one. I have one of those too at one point.
Really?
And it's funny now looking back at the early LCD panels on the back. They're just so tiny.
You know what, Ted? I actually want to buy, and researching the script for today's podcast, I actually want to buy the Canon Ixus 2 just for the nostalgia.
Yeah. You ought to talk to Gareth Miles, my co-host on Tech Addicts, because he's got at least one, if not four.
Really? Wow. Yeah. It was a good camera for the time. Yeah.
Indeed. Anyway, nice bit of nostalgia there. Joe, you've got some things to add to the theme before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, my journey started from looking at family, right? Because my mum used to shoot with a Nikon D7000, which I borrowed off her. But on the family thing, my uncle as well. So if you grow up seeing people in the family with cameras, you see that as something you want to do and move on to as well.
Absolutely.
That's part of my journey. A few things. I've got four reasons. I'll try and go through them really quickly because without repeating everything we've already said too much.
Yeah.
I still love mobile photography, but it doesn't quite scratch the itch that real cameras do. The tactile feel, like Charlie said, the ergonomics, the half press and full press on shutters, all these things, the focus rings, manual focus, like all these things just make it more special for me. Low light capabilities, obviously, it's physics. Like, phones cannot do what cameras can, especially with full frame sensor. Even with the AI smarts that you get now, and it just can't compete, really, especially if you want to blow that picture up bigger. And then on that note, the RAW files are miles better to work with. You can manipulate to your heart's content with all that extra data you've got in there. This also goes for log video, which I haven't really explored yet, but something I want to get into. And as I say, I'm a content creator, and I wanted to get better quality video with my content. And natural progression was to move from a phone to a camera. Right. That's not to dissuade anyone who makes content with a phone, because 4K 30 on a phone is very, very good. It's just not the same quality of what you can get with a camera. And people that have seen my content would agree, like, it has stepped up. I mean, yeah, I haven't changed, yeah. But it has stepped up.
You can tell.
Yeah, you can definitely tell. That's my progression, really. I didn't have bags of cash. I wanted to get a good hybrid, which is why I've got the Panasonic Lumix S5 II. Hybrid, for people that don't know, is one that can take really good stills and video, because a lot of cameras are centric towards one or the other normally. I got mine for $1,099, the body, which even now, today, you can't get it for that price normally. So I got a really good deal.
Well done. Very good. Okay, so that was the theme, how we moved, why we moved from phone to camera. And as I say, we'll be back next time with the infrared thing, and watch out for that. Ian, the rest of the show is for you, because we've got some thoughts about some photographs you added in terms of the theme, but also you've got some photographs of, you know, what you've been up to from the last fortnight. So take it away and lead us through the rest of the show.
Absolutely. And again, it's a bit of a theme around using cameras and phones, to be honest with you. I said my evolution, as I've been doing it for the last 5 years, and bought the Sony system and went on lots of photography trips to some amazing places and to take some photos. So that's what really drove the creativity and the real learning process. Main thing, as Charlie mentioned, I think it was, once you learn the exposure triangle, you start getting there. The last recent years, it's turned more into a job. So it's I shoot the motorsport. So now it's taking a lot of that creativity out of the photography. And it's probably where I'm finding now that I probably won't go and book a trip somewhere to do a photography trip, because I'm doing photography throughout the year. So that's maybe something that's sort of changed on that perspective. And I think another thing we mentioned, that the having something with you when you go out to still spark that creativity. I really get some value out of the phone I'm using at the moment, the Oppo Find X9. There was a couple of shots on there, one of Scroby Sands wind farm, and also just one when I was walking the dog and looked down and there was just the gravel and the sea coming in and getting a shot there. It's those kind of shots that drive the creativity for me of being able to do everyday stuff, but also create something slightly different, if that makes sense.
Do you think that could have been better? Take the top-down gravel or stones on the beach shot. Do you think that could have been better, depending on whether it was taken with a phone or with your camera gear?
I don't think I would have got the same shot, and I don't think I would have seen it the same way I would if I hadn't had that super wide X-pan mode, because it to me, it doesn't work the same, even though it's a picture of nothing. To me, it looks kind of interesting, and the way that it's probably over sharpened and created the colors created something different. Again, it's not something you probably put on the wall, but you go, oh, it's something interesting out of nothing sort of thing. Yeah. But I wouldn't have been able to get that same shot because I wouldn't have had the lenses with me. And I think down...
But you might have had.
True, but if I go... Yeah, I mean, I don't... Yeah, you would have to have a super wide lens and you'd think about it, but I managed to grab that during my day walking the dog. And I was quite happy that, one, I walked the dog, and two, I got a picture. It's like, oh, cool. It was a bonus, but it's probably lacking in tent and everything, but it's maybe the having a phone with you, you get those lucky accidents, maybe.
I'd argue there is intent there, though.
Just a reminder before you go on, Joe, to say that these photographs that we're talking about, you can see in the Google Photos Camera Creation Shared album, and there's a link in the show notes to that, and you'll be able to see what we're talking about if you click through and have a look at that. Sorry, Joe.
Yeah, I'd argue there is intent, because what we discussed when I saw you, Ian, like, is one, having the eye, and you've seen it. Then you have to get the phone out of your pocket still and take that shot. Mm. So there is intent there, I believe. So it's the whole process is a lot quicker. That's the only difference. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I think it's that instant, back to maybe what we're conditioned with now, that this instantaneous gratification that you definitely don't get on a camera, but you do get on a phone, because if you were doing that, I mean, the walk I do, again, you've got the groins and you've got the sea coming in. You see a lot of photographers down there doing the long exposure piece, and you can really frame it and get a beautiful, silky, smooth shot. But I'm walking the dog, so it's like I have a job to do. But if I can get a shot at the same time, then that's good for me. And maybe, again, my use case is slightly different now, where I'm seeing photography is not something I do it for pleasure, but it's not something that I would I don't have the time to actively go out, because I shoot so much motorsport, if that makes sense. But one of my biggest bugbear, I love taking images of gigs and concerts and things like that, and a lot of the stuff that Ed does on there, there's a real challenge of going to a concert or a gig and having a camera with you, and they don't like to have anything that looks like a professional camera to take it in there. And even though video is quite good in a concert, and phones are good from that perspective, getting any decent stills out of it, I think, is impossible. So back to that Goldilocks camera sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
At the moment I'm doing I do some presentations for camera clubs, really around my sort of journey and motorsport and F1. People are interested in it, so I go along to camera clubs and do an hour and a half pitch. As an example from last night, I put a slide together, which was just from some shots I got in December, but I thought this was relevant because there's image there. There's three images from the mosque in Abu Dhabi, and I was lucky. I had the day off between shooting, and I could go there. Just busted a gut to try and get there for sunset. Just about missed it. But I had my Z6 and I had my camera phone with me. And two of the pictures there are on my phone. The other one is on the Nikon. And I think unless you pixel peep, you maybe had you struggled to see the differences between them. So I was really happy with how the phone took some images, but also the camera. The one thing on the camera was that it took an awful lot longer to set up and to do that, and especially when there's people moving around and you're really trying to chase that light before it totally goes. But I thought it was interesting to compare some similar shots, one on a full-frame camera and two on a phone.
The one that looks sharper to me, I mean, we're looking at this in a kind of Google Docs document, so it's probably not the best forum anyway, but the one that seems to look sharper to me is the one with the red sunset in the background. The one with the two people in it seems to be a bit more fuzzy, and I'm not sure about the other one.
Yeah, so, I'd agree.
Yeah.
I'd say the one with the two people is the one with the camera. The camera phone.
The phone, yeah.
Okay. And the one in the middle?
I think that's the camera, yeah.
I think that's the camera.
The blue one was the camera.
I was going to... That's what I thought. I was going to say...
Whoops.
Which one was the camera?
Which
phone
one was
shots?
The phone?
Middle
so
one and...
The phone... There's two phone shots. The
middle
the
and
one
the right.
In the middle and the one on the right.
Mm.
And the, say the one on the left was the one... I took on my camera.
Oh.
It's when you're doing processing, wow. You can tell. Yeah. You can see some of the sharpening on the far right one and the AI processing, and the same with some of the elements in the middle one as well.
Yeah.
But they're all wonderful shots.
They're all really good.
So was your presentation, Ian, actually about phone versus camera, or is that just a side issue?
It's just a side issue.
Okay.
I talk about how I... got into photography and
right.
Talk about the similar sort of part of suggesting a theme for tonight is part of the sort of pitch of this is how I started off and here's an example, which one's which. And again, unless you pixel peep, I have put the three images in the Google Doc, so you've got the originals. The one in the folder is the three images, and the Google Doc is just the PowerPoint slide.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was just to prove, really, that, again, unless you really pixel peep, you may struggle. But I'm with you that I do have... One thing I have is that I've probably got about 100 photos on my camera that I haven't processed yet. Or in Lightroom that I haven't processed yet, and I probably will never get to. But it's a lot quicker with getting something off your phone and things like that. So it's that back to that instantaneous gratification sort of thing. But
mm-hmm.
But I thought it was an example anyway of how far phones have gone. But again, we've got different use cases. This one here, the one below that is in London. I think Charlie has taken that photo, gave me the inspiration to when I go into London to take that square photo looking up by the Lloyd's building. This again was on my phone because I didn't have the super wide lens for my camera. I had my camera with me, but I wouldn't have got that shot because I only had my 25-70 with me. So just an example where maybe you've got so much flexibility in a phone but again if you were going with intent to get that picture and you were wanted to do something really exhibited or have it printed off or something, you would spend the time with the intent to take the right kit with you. But from doing a snapshot with your phone, you're probably getting 60-70% there. I don't know what you think, Charlie.
It's good. I would agree with you. I think with a phone, you know, oftentimes if you don't want attention drawn to yourself, it's best to use that. But sometimes when you get out a big camera, people behave differently. It's like it changes really the environment you're in, I find, a lot of the times. So sometimes I do use my phone. It just depends, I think.
Mm. Yeah. But again, I thought it was interesting to do that. And again, I lot on work-wise for the motorsport that you do a lot of research beforehand of where to take shots, and also if you're walking the track, I'll shoot angles with my phone so I know what to then shoot with my camera. But again, it's maybe just for setting up the shot on others. The other two images on there was using the reflect lens filter. So this was from the top floor of the Sea Containers hotel. I was with Joe for the Honor gig. The top one is on my camera with the black hole lens attached to it. Again, it's not the best shot. Again, it's straight off my camera. I put it into and exported it and put it in here, so I haven't really done anything to it.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Is it how it is? I like it. I think it's great.
Well, I'd probably make it darker and bring out the a little bit on the wheel and stuff like that, but to have a play around with it. But I also had a play with putting that lens in front of my phone and not dropping it out the window or anything, or dropping it off the edge, which was an effort. But again, just to prove that, again, you can get a similar shot. It's you don't have as much scope with it. It's a bit softer. You don't get the detail and things like that. Yeah, but you wouldn't expect it to.
That's what I noticed. It was the top one is much sharper. The OXO letters are clearly better, aren't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And see that little them dots? That's the lens reflection you get with phones quite often.
Yeah.
See the dots to the right of the OXO.
Oh yeah, right, okay.
Phones have a tendency to do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, I thought I'd just put in I put these in the shared folder just as a bit of comparison, but again, it's nothing world shattering that you're going to get a lot better picture on a camera, but 60-70% there you'll get on a camera phone in good conditions, really. But
cool, very good.
It's still nice, wonderful
shot,
isn't it?
Yeah, very good shot.
It's a good photo.
Right, okay, and your last fortnight, you got some. Actually, I realised that we got some stuff to come from Joe as well. So after you've done your shots of the fortnight, Ian, we'll go to Joe.
Cool. Yeah. So not much on the shooting front, to be honest. I think I shared the images that I took in London just before Christmas. Haven't been out too much with the camera, so. We had the good fortune to meet up face-to-face with Joe last week, did take the camera. But again, it was absolutely chucking it down with rain. It was awful. So there was no way I wanted to stand outside to try and get any photographs. So it's been...
Lightweight?
I've been... yeah, exactly. I waved the white flag and exactly. So I've been putting some bits and pieces together for presentations. Again, slide there, just really on the background, a bit of behind the scenes of Formula One. I've got a couple of events coming up. I've got a rally I'm covering in Snetterton at the start of February, and I've signed up to go to China, which should be interesting for the Formula One. So hopefully I can get some travel shots. I've got a day either side of going to the Grand Prix, so I think from an experience perspective it's one of the countries I wanted to get to, relatively cheap to get to. I don't know if you can get back for relatively cheap, but it's relatively cheap to get there. So yeah, I'm looking forward to some, not just the car shots, but some of the shops of Shanghai and stuff like that. So hopefully I can get some stuff from that. And that's about it from me, really.
We'll look forward to seeing what you bring back when you're on the next show, which might be a few weeks by the sounds of it. So we'll look forward to that. Joe, you've put a few shots in the Google Photos Shared album. Do you want to tell us about those?
Yeah, so some are from the Honor briefing. We went out and we could take pictures of London in the evening. And one of the Shard there was with my 100mm S5.2. And I've changed the colours quite a bit. And this goes to the quality of the RAW file for me, what you can do to manipulate the image. I don't think you would have been able to get, like, see the smoke in the foreground at the bottom there. I don't think it would look quite as good as that on a phone.
I really like the colour grade there, Joe. I think it's really good.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, 100%.
It's just a bit different. And actually, the next shot, you can sort of see what the colours kind of were like on a Magic 8 Pro. So I've taken a picture of someone taking a picture, with my 100mm lens. Because I actually filmed him doing that and used it as part of my video, my teaser video.
It's completely destroyed the light, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, as good as the phone is, it's just not the same as what a camera would do.
It's taken all the atmosphere out of it because of the. It's made it cold, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was more blue than what my image was, of course, because of the colour grading I've done. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it does make it more different tone.
Yeah,
exactly, especially when you're zooming in on a telephoto. But the compression you can get with a 100mm lens, you're not going to get that with a phone, which is one of the reasons I put some of these images in there. And so that's another photo. And then there's a third one I popped in there with the walkie-talkie. That was, again, the 100mm lens. I don't think a phone could take it quite as good as that, the clarity with all the windows, but... I don't know, I could be wrong. Then moving forward, my mum's birthday, that's with my 50mm lens. It's not an amazing photo, it was just a random shot. But I think you wouldn't get that quality. Again, the compression in the background, you wouldn't get that natural compression with a phone. And that's the reason I've put that image in as well. And the flowers in the foreground that are blurred as well. That's a difficult shot for a phone to do.
I guess you might, but it might be artificially generated in software, which phone fans would argue, well, that's good enough, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's just down to that having that eye and actually looking in detail. On the face of things, the phones can do a fairly decent job.
Yeah.
But when you look more closely at it, it wouldn't have the quality that's got. Again, there's at the Honor event more recently, I got a picture of Ian taking a shot of the screen with his fancy lens, reflex. Is it reflex lens you call it? Is that what it is?
Reflect lens,
yeah.
Yeah.
But I've made it black and white apart from the actual shot on his camera, just for a bit of fun. That was just a quick snapshot as well, which shows that you can do a quick snapshot with a camera if you want to, because the camera's auto modes are actually quite good these days. I do shoot auto quite a lot because I'm still learning, and sometimes you need to just quickly snap a shot. So, yeah, you can still do quick shots for people want to move onto cameras. It's not impossible. It's just when there's certain scenarios it doesn't work in auto.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why you need to learn the triangle and everything. And then there's one shot of my friend Geeky Stuff. Again, I think the depth you get in that photo with the people in the background, the foreground, you're just not going to get that depth in a phone shot. You can see that one pops, my friend Geeky Stuff, with the Honor Magic 8 Pro in his hand. There's a one gent next to him to the left and to the right, and there's loads of people in the background as well. And, you just wouldn't get that pop that you get with a camera.
It's fairly well isolated, isn't it?
The
plane of focus is just right, yeah. You're quite right. Okay, thanks, Joe. That's good. One item of news which is worthy of mention. I can't remember who put this in, but it was the price of the... Oh, Charlie, do you want to take this? The price of the Ricoh?
isn't it? What is it listed as? Is it $1,600 US or $1,700 US?
$2,200 US, £1,600.
$2,200 US, £1,600. Okay, So you're getting the same as the Ricoh GR4, the one they released 3 or 4 months back, I think it is. But it's mono, isn't it? So it only shoots black and white.
Yeah.
So it's going back to this thing, like, you know, scarcity again, like having cutting off your options in the hopes that it's going to make you more creative.
Yeah,
I really don't think that that is the answer. You could buy two Ricohs for that price used. Yeah.
See, I love monochrome images, but I just don't get why you would restrict yourself to just
would
that.
You pay £1,600 for it?
Absolutely not, no.
No, of course not.
I think we were probably expecting this to be like, you know, 1,300 or at most, but 1,600 quid it's come out at. And I think that Ricoh are going on record as saying, you know, prices are going up, as have other companies this week. I've noticed, you know, beware this year because prices are going up. So if you want tech stuff, buy it now, I guess, but don't bother with a Ricoh.
Yeah, but for that price, I mean, you could get yourself like quite a good laptop, can't you, for 1600?
Yeah.
A small point and shoot camera, just in mono. You know. It's crazy.
Bonkers.
Be interesting to see how it sells. I mean, I guess it is this...
It's going to be a flop.
Really? You think so?
It'll
be something that rich people get for their rich husbands who've got everything. and they'll be
no,
very
be the Leica model.
Yeah, that's true. Right, okay, we're done. We're running long, as always. Been a great chat today. Thanks to you all for joining me. TedSalmon.com/camera creations is the website where you'll find links to all this stuff we've been talking about. The website also has the link to the shared album in Google Photos, so have a look at that if you're listening along. TedSalmon.com is where you'll find all the stuff that I do, that the team does with audio podcasts and all the MeWe groups, and we also have a Camera Creations MeWe group, so join that if you would like to as well, and let us say what you're taking in terms of photographs with your camera, if you've got one, and we'll be back in a fortnight's time with some of us. We'll have a quorum, I'm sure, to talk about infrared or some other theme that pops along. But for the meantime, thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you again in a fortnight.